Welcome to Sports Med Res's This Week in Review podcast, where we highlight the recent news in sports medicine research. This past week's most popular post on sportsmedres.org discussed a study that found that the Microsoft Kinect provides a method to objectively measure active shoulder range of motion. The findings from this study suggest that Kinect provides a practical and inexpensive way of measuring shoulder active range of motion compared to expensive marker-based optical motion capture system. Clinicians can expect a moderate and reasonable relationship between Kinect measurements and self-reported shoulder motion. The use of infrared sensor technology to capture this data is inexpensive, mobile, and may provide efficiency between clinicians. With further research and modification, the Kinect could very well become the preferred alternative to the way shoulder active range of motion is documented. The Kinect could turn out to be a great tool for clinical evaluations. These technology articles always tend to catch my eye, partially because we see technology get embraced so quickly in sports medicine. And it's exciting to have this prospect that something that used to be relegated just to research laboratories can now be deployed in a clinical setting. I think in the coming years, we're going to see more and more apps on smartphones that'll enable us to do more advanced measurements within the clinic, as well as repurposing of the Wii balance boards, the Kinect motion analysis systems, so that we can start integrating these into our clinical practice. When we see studies like this, one of the nice things about it is that it actually reminds us that when we get these new software and new hardware, one of the things we need to do is just double check that it's going to perform as well as we hope it does in the clinic. And in this case, it shows that the Kinect actually does perform well. But we also can't lose sight of the fact that when we get these new measurements, we need to, within our own clinics, ensure that we're able to use the software and hardware correctly and accurately to get the results that we need in our clinics. And so oftentimes what we may need to do is try and replicate some of these studies that are being done here within our own clinical setting. So for example, in this study, one of the things you may do is have a patient stand in front of the Kinect, get measured for active shoulder range of motion, and then you or one of your other clinicians measures with a goniometer the range of motion that you're getting. And then you see, you know, are the two systems giving you similar measures? Despite my hesitancy about us just jumping all in, I do think that these new technologies are really going to have an impact on how we practice athletic training and sports medicine, and it'll be for the better. Since our last post, we also had several other posts on sportsmedres.org. That's res.org. I'd like to briefly highlight a few of these, since we haven't had a new podcast in a while because I was traveling. For one, we shared 15 position statements that just came out from the American Heart Association with the American College of Cardiology that discussed cardiovascular concerns in sports. If you haven't seen this, I recommend that you go to our list of position statements on the website and look at them and kind of get a sense for at least what's out there. I think when you look at this list, one of the things that really stands out is that there's 94 position statements or consensus statements related to sports medicine since 2011 alone. If you had asked me 2 years ago or a few years ago how many position statements I thought were related to sports medicine, I definitely would not have suggested that the number could be this high. So it's important for us to be aware of what topics are covered in position statements and be familiar with the general take-home messages of these. And many of these statements are publicly available so you can download them. And a lot of them have very concise recommendation lists. So even if you don't have time to understand them and read the background information for why they came to these recommendations, at least you'll know what people are advocating. We also had a post that described a study which found that the application of a nodal transcranial direct current stimulation during strength training could deliver prolonged benefit in strength and neuroplasticity for the contralateral arm. This goes back to the concept of cross-education. Another post that we had was related to dental injuries and showed that dental injuries were relatively rare among high school athletes, but most of these injuries actually occurred while an athlete was not wearing a properly fitted mouth guard, and the authors suggested that this supports recent clinical trials that have indicated that properly fit in mouth guards may be the ideal way to go if we're prescribing mouth guards to our patients. A third post highlighted a study in which the authors found that if an athlete suffers a rotator cuff tear, whether it's partial or full thickness, their chances of returning to their previous level of play after surgery is favorable at the recreational level, but not at the professional level. And finally, another post noted that athlete trainers should be aware of an athlete's medication at the time of baseline or post-concussion testing, because they may influence neurocognitive testing results. Don't forget that we also share extra material on social media, and if you're an athletic trainer who's looking to get the last evidence-based practice CEUs before the deadline this year, then please check out our 4 online courses available through the Human Kinetics website. Remember, you can always follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, or LinkedIn. I look forward to chatting with you on these social services. We'll be back next week with more sports medicine research. Until then, have a fun one.